dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Maximum Film. It's episode 262 and we're about to do what we do. It's your host Ify Whiteyway and in the booth with me are my friends. So let me introduce you to them. All right, first up we have the Christmas Zaddy himself, Ify Shakuda, EGM and Whiteyway's favorite critic, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Well, Ify Shakuda, I just want to say what is good is the fact that I am feeling much better after having had my first tango with COVID and that the world was able to move on without me, which is always great. I know there's a lot of people out there, whether they're parents or you know, in different job situations where they just have to soldier on. And I was allowed to sort of take myself off the board. It was okay. You guys carried on with the show with Jordan Crumsciola. Thanks for that. My crack team of international film critics at the Wrap, more than making up for the fact that I didn't get to go to the Venice Film Festival this year, filing reviews either from the festival itself or out of screenings in LA or New York. And so I'm going to be gross and have a moment of gratitude for the people in my life who made it possible for me to spend 10 days in bed sipping Gatorade and wanting to be anywhere else.
That was so sweet.
I know.
I mean, what a man.
I promise not to be sincere for like another 6 months.
Okay, good. I want you to know, Alonzo, my life was affected because, of course, I was just up every night, like self-flagellating, like just doing a whole lot of like, oh, candles and moaning.
Well, it worked. Well
wailing.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Drea did that thing from Midsommar where we clasped each other and just wailed towards the heavens. So
to be fair, we do that every Tuesday. This time it was with
give it
real
focus.
Purpose.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've already mentioned her. You already love her. It is the Queen of the Midwest herself. Super festival programmer, producer, all around. You know her. You love her. It's Drea Clark. What's good?
So, you know, I did not know that Alonzo was going to begin with extraordinary grace, but my what's good was already in place, and it feeds right into that because in a way, it's a mea culpa to him. You guys, Selena Gomez in Only Murders in the Building, how
Thank
dare
you?
I ever suggest she was not bringing it the same level as Martin Short and Steve Martin? Obviously, I loved that the first season. I finally watched the second season. Her deadpan is like, mwah, it's unmatched. It's so good. Anyway, I regret ever suggesting she was less than. And I got so much enjoyment. I love that show. Was super happy that I waited per usual so I could binge it.
Sure.
But yes, my apologies to Ms. Gomez. For shame on me.
Learn a thing, Drea.
Hey, I can admit when I'm wrong.
Oh, yeah. Look, you know, you did it. You know, they always say, you know, what is it? Insult publicly, apologize publicly, you know, and you did it. You did it right here. And now we're just going to let you sit in that shame for the rest of the episode.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, gang. Just over here, as if there's not enough heat around me. I need another shame as an extra cushion.
Yeah. No, we're all living in hell in Los Angeles right now. But you know who's looking quite heavenly with that golden angel right behind her. It's senior entertainment writer at Variety, Angelique Jackson. What's good?
Well, I mean, I love anywhere I can go where there's immediately an angel reference. I actually like to walk in Halo first. That is how I present myself. but I mean, I'm just really excited, one, to be joining you guys and talking about one of my favorite movies of the year in a little bit. But also, I'm just excited about movies right now. I mean, the idea that it's fall festival season, I'm on my way to Toronto later this week. I'm just really pumped about all of the just like various discourses that are going on right now and really excited for some of them to be over really, really soon. I think everybody knows which one I'm talking about.
Indeed.
Yes, indeedy.
We are so not close.
Iffy, what's good?
Oh, yeah. What Alonzo said. Iffy, what's good?
Oh, you know, what's good with me is this AC. You know, this heat wave is going on. And also this room not being terrible, because in my office I had like a fan. And I took it up to my room because my AC needed backup this weekend. And I was afraid to come in here to record. But I think it being lower has kept the coolness level going. And I'm thankful for that. You know, speaking of gratitude, thankful for that. Thankful for the science that allows that to happen. And thankful to be, you know, surrounded by good friends.
Air conditioning and outshine popsicles, I think, really are the key to getting through this whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's exactly the way, because Outshine doesn't have dairy in it, and I'm lactose intolerant, and I still had vanilla ice cream with a little bit of that with the Flyby Jing Sichuan spice on top. Try it. It's great. You'll like it.
Bold. Very bold.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You know what else is bold? Some of these suits in the film that we've watched today, because today we're talking about the new film starring Sterling K. Brown and Regina Hall, Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. And later we're nominating mockumentaries to the Hall of Excellence. But first, it's time for Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Our movie news segment, where we go through the week's movie news and decide for ourselves if it's important and if we care. And first up, we're talking about that famous Nicole Kidman AMC ad and it getting a sequel. You know, the one where heartbreak feels good in a place like this. It's become a kind of pledge allegiance for post-shutdown moviegoers, at least the ones who go to AMC theaters where it plays before every screening. As I said, we're the Rowdy Regal writers on this side. but this week's Vanity Fair reported that the ad is getting a sequel. The article also revealed that both the original ad and the sequel were penned by Oscar-nominated screenwriter Billy Ray, who wrote Captain Phillips and many other films. Is this important? Do you care?
Oh, very important. Because you would think, oh, surely this is like some ad guys sat down and came up with this. No. They went to the guy who wrote Shattered Glass and said, write something for Nicole Kidman about how great it is going to AMC theaters. And that has become one of the most sort of quoted bits of dialogue of the year. Like people wear it on t-shirts now. Like it has taken off. So this is what happens when you go to credentialed writers and say, like, I need poetry about the cinema. And so, yeah, I can't wait to see what the next one is. I don't know if she's going to mention, you know, the upsized drinks. but, you know, I leave it to Mr. Ray to figure out what that's going to be about.
I do. I am an AMC viewer because those are the ones closest to me now. And I look at that as like, oh, this is when I want to get there. Because AMC, I don't like to watch trailers, as you guys know, because everything is spoiled these days. And I like a bit of mystery. And so I try and time my arrival.
Whereas AMC loves a trailer.
They put like 1,000 of them. So I know if I roll in right when Nicole is beginning, I have done it right. I'm like doubly pleased to see her. And her, it's like this incredible bedazzled pinstripe suit. And Billy Ray had tweeted at someone a few weeks ago that he was the one who wrote it. And since then, my like re-listening to it heightened, because then I was thinking of him in the booth with them like, okay, we really want to nail home that what's important is coming to the theater. It's not just movies. It's being here and purchasing our tickets.
Dazzling images on a huge silver screen. Sound that I can feel. Somehow, heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
And so, like, looking, like Alonzo said, it's a different craft and looking at the small tweaks to that. And my favorite pop culture moment of it was somebody had, like, an outdoor screening in their backyard and they read it aloud, like, as a group before the movie. And I'm like, oh, I'm sure AMC is thrilled for the cultural moment and also wishes you did that in one of their cinemas.
Well, speaking of today's movie, I love the fan edit where somebody put Regina Hall's Brenda from Scary Movie into the Nicole Kidman speech. Yes, it's out there.
Oh, I want to find it.
Can I tell you guys my favorite thing about this is that I actually hadn't been to an AMC in a really, really long time. I guess I had just been going to other theaters and then obviously, you know, the pandemic. But the first time that I saw this ad in a real cinema was before I saw Top Gun Maverick.
And
it just felt
we
right.
We come to this place.
It just felt fair. And I understood what had brought them together in the first place.
Nicole and Tom.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And the
yeah,
sweet yeah. irony that I know he hates her coming right before it.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sure in his head it just means that she was just the opener.
Oh,
he was a headliner.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. But the other thing that's great about this, though, too, is that this was Nicole's idea. Bringing Billy Ray on to write this was actually all thanks to Nicole Kidman. My colleague at Variety interviewed Billy Ray earlier this week. And because they had worked together on Secret, it was, Secret in Their Eyes. She called him and was like, hey, so to do an AMC ad. Want to connect with the team before I do it? Genius. So, you know, Nicole is also a great producer. She knows how to make movie magic.
Oh, yeah.
Well, see, as a, you know, rowdy, regal writer, you know, I'm waiting for us to, you know, what is our comeback going to be? Because this current quoting films intro grates my ears and makes me want to punch myself in the face.
It's all happening.
This thing is nicer than my apartment.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
And it sucks because a lot of my friends are in it. And I was like, we gotta go back to the drawing board. So I'm thinking maybe a Quentin Tarantino directed Charlize Theron. She kicks up her feet at the movies, obviously barefoot.
No. You know,
barefoot.
30-second shot on the feet and then right to her face. And she's like, God fucking damn it. I love movies. And maybe we throw in the N-word. You know, like, you know, really... Really cool. No,
they want to attract people. If they want to bring them in.
Look, I'm telling you, we'd get
screaming.
We would be packed to the brim with like Snyder fans and we'd be like, that's my pitch. Please don't use it. As a matter of fact, delete it from your brains right now.
Oh my God. Okay, well, speaking of movies. Y'all, last Saturday was National Cinema Day in the U.S. Over 8 million people hit the theaters, tempted by $3 ticket prices, which is the most people theaters have seen on any given day all year long. In London, a similar event on the same day brought in almost 1.5 million people. This happened despite the fact that there are not a ton of new movies to choose from at theaters right now. Is this important? Do you care? And addendum, are you like me and had no idea this happened?
I knew. Did anybody go?
I knew because Alamo hit me up and we considered it, but we were like, it's going to be so packed because it is also the hottest weekend. And it could not be more perfectly timed to have a $3 movie marathon on the hottest weekend. And I was like, you know, shout out to those soldiers. Hopefully y'all masked up because I know y'all had to be packed to the brim. Could $3 for free AC? Yeah, go ahead. Put the Irishman back in rotation.
I'll be here for a bit.
Listen, if you were looking to sleep in air conditioning, that is exactly what that would be.
Oh,
Angelique, what if mine?
a house divided right now.
I mean, look, on the one hand, yes, brilliant idea because obviously theaters are all hurting and Labor Day, traditionally one of the slowest movie weekends of the year. So like on paper, I totally get that. On the other hand, I think what it doesn't address is that a lot of people are going to movie theaters for exactly what you just said, the teeming masses. And so like the idea of going when it's going to be cheap, but it's also going to be like not an empty seat in the place and people breathing all around you and no mask restrictions in place. I think that was a big pass for a lot of people as well. So it addresses one structural issue that's happening to theaters right now, but it completely ignores and in fact exacerbates the other one.
I think you guys know, even pre-pandemic, my least favorite thing about most situations is people. So having a ton of them is certainly... No, it is a good idea to do it this weekend, like way to zhuzh it. But I don't see movies on weekends anyway, and I'm certainly... if I had known about this, would have run the other direction if I had thought, Oh, yeah. This is going to tie. Loads of people, you say? People excited about a bargain? No. No, no.
Well, speaking of other movies, Deidre, it doesn't work as well when I do it. Merry Luda Christmas, everybody. Chris Ludacris Bridges and Laurel Howery are making a Christmas movie for Disney Plus. The movie titled Dashing Through the Snow will also star Tiona Ferris and is being directed by Tim Story and produced by Will Packer. Details are scant at the moment, but we know the movie is about a divorced dad who hates Christmas. But of course, we'll learn the true meaning of the holiday season by story's end. Is this important? Do you care?
Wait, did you already see this? How do you know that he's going to learn the... What?
Spoiler, you guys.
Oh, my God. I do love this. I want to say, I'm so sorry to Kat Graham that she didn't get a call for this as well. Like, you think there would be room for her, but I like this cast. You guys know that I worked with Chris Bridges years and years ago on something truly ridiculous and traveled the country with him and many others for a few months. And the respect that I have for Chris Ludacris Bridges knows no bounds. He's like the best human, a sensible businessman, and unlike every other celebrity I've ever seen, like, can put a hoodie on and disappear in a crowd. He might be a spy. He might be a spy. I won't put it past him. He could do anything. But this is great. This is like an all-black team. Good. Good for you. Make the movie.
Will Packer's actually kind of, you know, this is not his first rodeo. Like, he produced Almost Christmas, and then also I want to say... Not Best Man Christmas. Anyway, he's got a couple of Christmas movies under his belt at this point. So this is clearly one of his niches that he's operating.
It's funny because I had run into Laurel Howery a couple of times. Really not run into, let's be clear. I had interviewed him on a red carpet a couple of times for Nope. And then a couple days later for the ESPYs. And he kept teasing this role. He was like, I have this beard for a reason. I'm playing a guy. He might be jolly. And I was like, are you playing Santa Claus? And he would never really tell me. So when this news finally came out that not only will he be like playing a black Santa Claus, but he's doing it with Ludacrismas himself, I am beyond thrilled. I'm, by the way, obsessed with that that joke now. And I would like it on all of the marketing. And if it's not there, I'm going to be really disappointed because it is a missed opportunity.
Well, I had to TM 30 Rock on that one. They invented the concept of Zoom Christmas.
You're right. I forgot all about that.
And, true. You know, Tiona Ferris, one of my favorite performers in the final seasons of Mad Men. It's always a little jarring when I see her not dressed as though it's 1967. But, you know, very talented all the same. I'm a big fan.
And I'll add, if you're going to, I'm thrilled because I've made numerous complaints lately of having genuinely funny actors and then not giving them funny material or surrounding them. And Tim Story, where he has like an action background. He started in music video, which is how I know his stuff. But he also has done great, like Barbershop. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, good. This guy might actually let Chris Bridges' charisma come across in a way that weirdly isn't always present in our favorite franchise, Fast and Furious.
Oh, producer Marissa points out Will Packer also worked on This Christmas, which is one of my favorite. We did on the show, in fact.
Oh,
one of my favorites of recent vintage. So, yeah, I'm in.
So I guess it's important and we care.
Yeah,
for
hugely
sure.
Important.
Extremely important.
We would actually go to the cinema on National Cinema Day, maybe. maybe like a really early screening or a really late one. But we would go.
In 2019, I would go to the cinema on National Cinema Day to see this. Yes.
Oh, yes. On that note, I don't know why I coughed like that.
You were like, hard left. Let's wrap this one
as
up.
As if I was trying to like ruin this. Okay,
Scrooge. We now know who the villain in the movie is. Spoiler alert again.
Well, that was my audition for the villains. I got to get this. The Forex market shuts down during Christmas, so I hate it. Hopefully this card seller from my hometown might teach me love.
Hurrah.
All right, well, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to give the people a show. We're talking about Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, so you stay right there.
Fun. fall is finally here, which means back to routine, back to busy schedules, and back to the best time-saving hack for weeknight dinners. Every plate.
So, you know, what's super convenient about Every Plate, as I've often mentioned during the What's Good, I have lucky enough, I scored a husband who cooks. But you know what? He doesn't want to cook every single night. He doesn't necessarily want to always go shopping for all the things that go into making a meal. And so with Every Plate, you get a great variety of stuff. It's always different. It's always interesting and new, but it's fast and it's casual. And whatever your level of comfort in the kitchen is, it is spelled out for you. Things are pre-measured, you know, and you can whip up these really delicious dishes with, you know, these wonderful ingredients that come to you, that arrive at your house in a nice cold box, and make it easy for you to put together a great meal, you know, in the middle of the week, for the weekend. They'll toss in a vanilla delight cheesecake or a sweet kale salad or garlic bread or protein bundles. There's all kinds of options here that will fit your diet, your taste, and will make you very happy.
Ooh, well, if you want to be very happy, why don't you go ahead and get your first box for just $1.49 per meal by going to everyplate.com and entering code MAXFILM149. That's everyplate.com and code MAXFILM149 for $1.49 per meal on your first box. Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Evie Wadiway. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Angelique Jackson.
Alonzo Durrell.
And today's movie was written and directed by first-time feature director Adama Igbo and co-produced with her twin sister, Adana Igbo. It premiered at Sundance and is now streaming on Peacock. Alonzo, would you mind giving us a brief synopsis of Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul?
Iffy, I think you stepped on Drea's line where she tells us that a movie premiered at Sundance, but I guess we'll just carry on. So this is a mockumentary about mega church pastor Lee Curtis Childs, played by Sterling K. Brown, and his wife Trinity, played by the always wonderful Regina Hall. And their church was once hugely powerful and successful and lucrative, but after some scandals regarding younger male members of the sect, everybody left and went to another nearby church. And so the documentary follows the Childses as they rebuild and get ready to reopen the church for what they think is going to be a triumphant Easter Sunday service. But the closer that we get to that day, the more it seems like that their prayers may go unanswered. Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul.
Yes, yeah. Indeed.
I know it's where you're going. I didn't get to correct you or throw in that it was a Sundance premiere, and you know I would have, but it is also in theaters. And I know that you were going to say that as well, Iffy.
Oh, no, I was just going to shout out Nigerian Excellence.
Oh, good. Okay.
Right on here. You know, I got to call it out every time, and I love to see it. As soon as that name popped on the screen, I was like, yep, I know which jell-off they're making. I know it's the best one, and I know it slaps. Oh, and let me tell you something. I had quite a good time with this. This was a blast, and it was funny watching it. Just the quick family dynamic for those who do not know. My dad's Nigerian, and with him I went to Catholic church. My mom is from Louisiana, New Orleans, and so with her I went to Baptist church. And then one time with my best friend in high school, DJ, I went to my first like black super church. So like, and it was, and it's very interesting, the dynamics between those three. I mean, the very obvious dynamics between a Catholic church and a Baptist church. But when you upgrade to a super church, there is a whole nother level. It really, like, I felt like this movie captured it so well, where it is like, it steps out of, like, you know, no offense to anyone who goes to a super church, but to me, it feels like it steps out of being a house of worship and indeed a show. It is like the musical performance is unmatched. Like it is the entrance, the look, like this was so authentic to that experience that it just made it that much sweeter when it became this satire and breakdown behind these places.
I feel like there's a lot of gentle-voiced youth pastors in Minnesota who sing Amy Grant on guitar that are going to really take umbrage to the idea that that's not the same level of showmanship that they, you could expect in a super church. I ran the gamut of going from ELCA Lutheran churches to Missouri Synod Lutheran churches. Am I right, you guys? Am I right? Crazy. It is very different. Thank you, Marissa, just chimed in. Missouri Synod is much more conservative. Women can, anyway, okay, I need to get back on track. This is the embodiment of the kind of thing we're talking about when we talk about, like, having interesting perspective behind the camera. Like, there's both an authenticity, there's a completely different worldview, there's a completely different world that you get to see if you haven't, like me. And to watch it, and then to also know I'm in safe hands that are seeing the full side of it and are not just giving me, because this movie is super funny so much of the time, right? Like, it's bringing to light this hypocrisy that exists within religion, within family dynamics, within small town cultural expectations. Like, there's all sorts of things happening, but you're never getting like a mean-spirited or a one-sided. Like, to me, there was a great fluidity in terms of who are the good guys, who are the bad guys, what is everyone doing in this experience? And that's why having the filmmakers make it with that background means so much.
Well, Angelique,
you tipped your hand early that this is one of your favorites of the year. Tell us about that.
Oh, I am happy to dive in. As a former Southern Baptist churchgoer, this spoke to me so much, because while I'm from actually like South Georgia, from what was in a smaller community, almost like one of these type of churches, but not on like the big Atlanta scale. It was kind of like the country wannabe version. This was it. I was just like, am I actually not watching a mockumentary about this thing? Am I watching a documentary about my life? You know, when they're in the basketball courts, I'm like, oh, yep, we had one of those. When I'm looking at it, it's so interesting to have someone be able to take an experience that is so definitively your own, or definitively it is so unique, but be able to paint it in such a way that is so easily accessible, because those communities are not. Like, that is what is so interesting about this, is that the kind of like closedness of like the Southern Baptist church community, and like how, you know, everybody in it understands it, but nobody else. I don't want to say it's not welcoming, because the doors of the church, the doors of the sanctuary are always open. But it is not something that people ever peel back the layers of. And it is so interesting to actually dive into what the inner workings of things are, you know, what it actually is to have basically a bless your heart off with somebody. That's one of my favorite scenes, because in general, and I'm kind of going to go back to the larger in a second, but in general, like, what makes the feature length version of this so interesting, that the short didn't really have the time to do, is really explores Trinity's side of this and what it's like to be a first lady, and everything that Regina Hall does in this movie, everything she does with her face, with her reactions, with her kind of like simmering under the surface, the smile that is plastered on, it is all this very bless your heart mentality that they show in the film. But that is the real center of this movie that you don't really get a chance to see in the short, because, you know, Sterling's Lee Childs, and Lee Childs as a character in general, is bombastic and big and fun and exciting, and that's kind of what you focus on. That's why it's funny, that's why it's fun. But when you get to watch it through her eyes and see some of the scenes, like, for example, the scene with her mother is not in the short, tells you a whole heck of a lot about what is really going on here, in addition to the dynamics of society and what it means to be a Christian. It's also what it means to be a Black Christian wife and all of those things.
Yeah, no, that's spot on. Like, the gender politics of this were really unexpected. And there's such a subtle attention to detail throughout, in terms of having this like front figurehead, peacocking, vain man, And then her being like, yeah, he's peacocking. That's what we do. Like, he has to. That's how he gets the word out. And the gender politics in terms of who could lead. And then they counter that with, we meet this other young couple that's also ministering in the same kind of faith. And their difference is they're both pastors. And they're younger and they're beautiful. And they both get to be the people. Whereas our, you know, putting this story in the hands of Regina Hall's character gives you a sympathy, but it also gives you a critique of her because she is really enabling so much and it does come out in the wash and she does have to confront that. But I just thought that it was such an astute structure of giving us the gender dynamics of these couples and who is allowed to have forward-facing power and who is not. And then how it all, you know, gets in the mix and is complicated by the very real, he is a pastor who is facing, it's sort of like litigation. Like he's had these accusers of sexual
impropriety.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm like, I don't even know what sphere this is, but they're all young men and it's all stuff. And he keeps talking about how the devil is anyway there. I mean, that's a whole other avenue, right? Like,
yeah, I'll tell you there, you know, there's this thing going on the internet these days where people do fan edits of movies. And usually it's like sort of big action blockbusters or whatever. And I kind of would love to see somebody take a crack at this movie because there's so much here that's so good. The performances, especially from the two leads, are so just on it and smart and sharp and perceptive. There are scenes that are so great, like where Pastor Childs sort of tries to pick up the sound man from the movie, who is openly gay, unlike the pastor, and is like clearly can see what's going on. And that there's so many pieces of this that I think work so well. What doesn't work is the whole mockumentary aspect, because the movie will shift from things that are being shot as part of the mockumentary versus things that clearly are not being shot, like the scene for their alone in their bedroom or the scene with her mom and stuff. And the movie doesn't give you any kind of visual difference between the two of them. It's not like the mockumentary stuff has like the, you know, the recording sign in the corner and the little frame bars or whatever. It just, it goes back and forth. And so the movie doesn't commit to the bit. And this sounds like a minor thing, but I think it undercuts the drama of it. And it even undercuts the satire of it because it's so obviously kind of played out where like they keep talking to the crew and like, oh, you could shoot this, but please don't shoot that. Like I think there's another pass on this movie could turn it into something really effective because there's so much here that's good. But I think at the way it is now, it feels like an extended comedy sketch that doesn't always land. And every one of those moments it works is bridged by stuff that's like, I get it. I see what we're doing here. We're making fun of a thing that has been made fun of a lot over the last 50 years. And I don't know. So I found that really frustrating because I did love so many parts of it.
This might be because of my 72-inch banger screen. But at least for mine, when it was the documentary, the bars were on the side and it had a smaller aspect ratio.
Pillar box.
Pillar box. And then when it was real, they had the regular cinema one. So it's funny because that was going to be one of my like plus points because I thought that was really cool how you're like, okay, we're not in the cameras. And they had some fun with it when he was confronted and you hear him say, cut the cameras. And then it like kind of swaps between and you're seeing what's being seen and what isn't. On there. So
that was lost to me on my laptop.
That's why I figured.
I'll say, and I don't know if Alonzo, it is also because of the screen difference. I actually really appreciated the sort of layered mockumentary real movie element. Like, and as someone who has programmed movie film festivals for so long, there was, you will definitely remember this, Alonzo, there was a series of time, like a 10-year period where I was like, if you show me a mockumentary that you've submitted to this film festival, I will shave your head. Because there were so many. It was such a fallback. It was the, what's Post the easy Blair way Witch around? Especially. Yeah, it was like, oh, here, we have like these technological challenges. Let's just make it a mockumentary. And then every single one of them had the scene of like, oh, is someone filming? what? Why is the camera? Like, I hate them so much. So I liked having this sort of play with what you can do from a mockumentary, especially when so much of this story is about like a false front, right? Of like trying to manufacture and control image in a way that's inauthentic and lacks integrity. And
but see, that's the thing. Aren't they savvy enough about how this works to know that having a documentarian come in is not the same as hiring somebody to do a thing that you're going to have final cut
up? No, I think that's really the thing.
People love cameras. I give them more credit than that. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Look at every idiot on Cops who's ever signed the release to allow them to be on Cops. They don't get to just use that stuff. Someone said, yes, you can keep this footage of me and put it on national television. People love a camera.
They're used to being in control. I mean, they've always been in control of this. So why would they think that the crew that they've hired won't just do what they say?
Yeah.
You know, in these types of churches, you know, everything you do you kind of become God. You're no longer like the vessel for God. Like, you are God. So you kind of get to do whatever you want, whenever you want. In my experiences, any sort of scandal, anything that happened, if you were in charge or related, the best person to be in one of these churches is related to the priest or the pastor or one of the high ranking officials, because you can get away with literal murder, maybe. Okay, probably not murder. And everybody will just be cool with it. They'll all just kind of like chitter chatter behind your back, but it'll be fine. So I really think they thought, oh, she's our friend. She's doing this to help us. Everyone else does everything to help us. So she must be on our same page. And you see hints of Trinity being like, okay, I see what you're doing here. You're actually trying to tell the real truth. I'm not here for that. But he doesn't think so. He thinks that she's his friend.
I don't know. Again, I think there are facets here of things that work, but I feel like there is such an element of low-hanging fruit to talk about sexual hypocrisy and organized religion that you have to... I think it demands that the movie be a little more challenging and you know, ruthless about what it's presenting, or ditch the mockumentary stuff and make it about this couple. And, you know, this couple is fascinating. She, you're right, all the stuff that she has to sort of like smile her way through and endure and at the same time exert her power where she's able. That stuff, I think, is some of the most interesting stuff. And his obvious conflicts about what he feels like as a Black minister he has to preach versus, you know, the desires of his own heart. Like, I don't know. I just feel all that stuff gets buried by the are we rolling stuff. And maybe I've just seen too many of these. I don't know.
Yeah. I found it more fluid. Like, I wasn't hung up on that. And I really did love, I thought there was so much nuance to her character in particular as to being a good or a bad person. And I also think that it comes across, this is a film that is in some ways about faith. And I think that movies that touch on faith or religion can often just be like one or the other. Like, oh, it's either a Kirk Cameron vehicle or people who are religious are idiots. And I thought that, I don't know if it was the combination of the mockumentary as a device or whatever. It certainly didn't keep me from that. But I really liked the moments with Regina Hall's character, Trinity, of seeing, oh, an actual sense of faith or an actual, like, even above and beyond all this, there is something about her, like, having a moment of prayer, having a moment of connection with what her God is. Like, I'm not a religious person, but I think that movies that can take the idea of faith, the idea of religion, and give any moments of sort of grace and actual connection in them, regardless of the format, I like to give credit to that, because I think it's a hard line to follow.
And what's also, you know, important about this movie is, as much as it is about, you know, faith and religion, it is very specifically about Blackness. It's very specifically about the Black church and the relationship that, you know, Black culture has to Christianity in this sense, but in relation to religion as well, because There's a lot of things that I feel like it's unpacking, from the sense of, like, you know, obviously the obvious fact that Lee Child is wrestling with being a Black man who is gay. But there's also other cultural aspects of it, like the fact that we have, you know, a man and woman pastor, and there's a lot of black churches were like, that's not cool. But there are elements to it from the kind of the showiness of the, you know, when she's discussing come as you are versus, you know, how we like to dress up for church. That's very much the church experience from the time you're, you know, a young child. It's like you have your church dress and you have your church hat and you have your church socks and shoes. And there's a presentation aspect that is also about we present ourselves this way and have to present ourselves this way because of how others will see us if we don't. That is performative on a level that's beyond being performative for the people in your church, but the people who are watching your church, if that makes sense. But yeah, that's something that I think is interesting that this does in particular with the conversation about the accusations and the sexual dynamics of Lee Childs is the conversations that are being had on television and on the radio. And the various people that are calling in about this, because it brings in the debate that happens often in the community about who is to blame, you know, why she stayed, why she should have left, what they mean to the community. That's probably the biggest thing. So much of, you know, the way they've given back to the community, what they mean to the community, should that absolve them of what he has or has not done? How there's so much conversation of, well, these men were consenting adults, so why is that a problem? I felt like they did a really good job of bringing in the community minded aspects of it and hearing from the voices who would be speaking about it to this movie.
Yeah, it's time to vote. The way we vote for things on this pod is screen it being the highest, stream it the middle, skip it self-explanatory. So who wants to kick this off?
I'm going to say stream it because I think you really do need to see Regina Hall and Sterling K. Brown's work here. It's just like they are just firing on all pistons as they tend to do. And they're completely magnetic. I agree with you. This movie is trying to get its hands around a lot. I think I disagree with you as to how successfully it does that, but it's definitely trying for something. And there are a lot of ideas and individual moments here, I think, that really land for me. So it's worth a look. I just really... I wish I had an Avid. I would start like chopping out stuff, but that's just me.
I'm definitely a screen it. This was one of my favorites out of Sundance. There's so much energy to this. We didn't even touch on just watch this to look at a shirtless Sterling K. Brown. Worth the price of admission. Be there, be a gross ogler. You have my permission.
A wet shirtless Sterling K. Brown.
Alonzo. Thank you for the... Yes, he is correct. A wet shirtless Sterling K. Brown.
These are full immersion baptism people.
Yes. Yes. I'll treasure those images forever. But yeah, I loved this. I had a great time watching it, and I had a great time with all of the thoughts it made me kind of wrestle with afterwards. And there's some genuinely... hilarious and then also heartbreaking stuff in this.
Well, I think everybody knows at this point that I'm a screen it. I truly do love this movie, and I love it more with each watch because of the subtleties to it. I mean, I do think it's a lot to get your arms around the first time. So it is one that I think improves upon each time I've watched it. And I would also recommend streaming the short. The short, you can actually find it on Issa Rae's YouTube channel, and it is it's a really interesting one, proof of concept, but two, different, slightly different approach to this same story. You can kind of see some of the stuff they kept, got rid of, added as they adapted it to a future.
Ooh, yeah, I'm going to screen it as well. Yeah, I think the unanimous thing is true. Regina Hall's, you know, performance is out of this world. And that's the only bummer is that, you know, I think Peacock might scare some folks away if they don't get to see it in the theaters, but highly recommend it. I hope you, you know, do what you have to see it.
If you can see it in the theater, do. It's more fun. Also, these are the kinds of movies where your box office means a lot.
Yes. Yes. Let your box office dollars make you holla. All right, we'll be right back after hearing from another show for Maximum Fun.
Hey there, I'm Ellen Weatherford.
And I'm Christian Weatherford.
And we've got big feelings about animals that we just got to share.
On Just the Zoo of Us, your new favorite animal review podcast, we're here to critically evaluate how each animal excels and how it doesn't, rating them out of 10 on their effectiveness, ingenuity, and aesthetics.
Guest experts give you their takes informed by actual, real-life experiences studying and working with very cool animals like sharks, cheetahs, and sea turtles.
It's a field trip to the zoo for your ears.
So if you or your kids have ever wondered if a pigeon can count, why sloths move so slow, or how a spider sees the world, find out with us every Wednesday on Just the Zoo of Us in its natural habitat on MaximumFun.org.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Carrie, is it?
Oh, yes. Hi, I'm Carrie.
I am Psychic Ross, and I will be reading you this evening.
Oh, interesting. Well, okay. I co-host a podcast. It's called Ono, Ross, and Carrie.
Yes, I'm sensing that. The spirits are telling me. It is a show about
poodles. Well, it's about like fringe science and spirituality and claims of the paranormal. And oh, you knew that.
You do research online.
But more importantly, like we do in-person investigations.
In-person investigate as well.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
See?
Me and my friend, this is so weird, my friend Ross, same name as you.
Weird.
He and I just go and try them all out. And actually, we've gone to a number of psychics. And to be honest with you, it's a lot like this. It's called Ono, Ross, and Carrie. They can find it at MaximumFun.org.
I could have told you that.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. It's your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonso Duraldi,
Angelique Jackson,
Drea Clark.
So at least some of today's movie can be considered a mockumentary, and though mockumentary is not the most common genre for film, there have been quite a few really memorable entries into the fake doc canon. So today, we are each going to nominate a mockumentary as a candidate for the Hall of Excellence. All right.
I feel like going first is a big thing.
Yeah.
I can't imagine we all wouldn't have one of these in mind. For me, you hear mockumentary and you think of Christopher Guest's Waiting for Guffman.
God damn it.
I know. I'm sorry. And that's why I'll speak first. I love this movie. I was also, you know, a theater kid, so it spoke to me on other levels. But Christopher Guest is responsible for the aforementioned nightmare of my life of getting a bunch of terrible comedies made independently that were like, oh, we're just going to set up wacky people and then we'll cut to them and they'll be doing direct to cameras and then they'll be having absurd scenes together. And what elevates his work, and in particular Waiting for Guffman, is you believe every one of these absurd people is real. For the most part, you mm-hmm. want to believe that they're real, but there's also so much beautiful. He knows what to leave in. Like if you go back, Parker Posey has like her entire audition scene. And it is like 5 minutes of Parker Posey playing this like 18-year-old girl auditioning. And she does a scene where she is acting to, like she is miming to the body of like her brother in a coma. It is the most insane, beautiful thing. And it is in its entirety. And it's that kind of thing that like Christopher Guest's sense of the timing, sense of what to keep in there, and sense of like just moving around. And then all that, and he built this musical that they're doing, right? Like you also get like there's story mechanism that it's not just, yeah, these people are wacky, but like it is going somewhere. There's an A to a B. You're moving things along. They're literally waiting for Guffman. They're waiting for a theater critic. Yeah. This movie I've watched a million times.
Oh yeah. No, that was a great pick. So great that it was my pick until it was stolen. But I'm going to use this, you know, golden opportunity to put over a piece of cinema that I thought was overlooked. It came out at a time that, you know, I think people just, it got lost in the shuffle. And that of course is Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping, because that was a banger mockumentary. So let me go. That's why I rushed before somebody can steal that from me.
Angelique just bounced like 4 feet off her chair.
It is one of my all-time favorite movies, and anyone who has never seen it, I just make them watch it if they come to my house. It is so vastly underrated as far as, like, if you ever had to sit through the Justin Bieber documentary or the Katy Perry documentary or any of the recent pop documentaries, good or bad, it takes all of the best and cringiest parts of those and turns them into actual brilliance. And some of those songs are bops.
She's absolutely putting effort into getting Iffy's pick voted. Are we going to count this? Hey. Is this okay?
Genius. Hey. It actually, just it saying. Almost was my pick. It was okay. My backup pick in case somebody picked my pick. So I'm just going to just jump in and go, even though it's not my turn. Drop Dead Gorgeous is my pick.
Oh my gosh, I'm ashamed of myself right now.
You should be very ashamed. No. Oh no is right. I'm disappointed. And so is Amy Adams. The idea that this is like her first screen role, her first film credit, that in itself lends it to be in the Hall of Fame. It is brilliant performances all the way around and made me want to be a part of that pageant as long as the chairs were dry.
It does have a few shining red flags, but still stands up. So funny. So many great comedians. I'm sorry, Ellen Barkin in that and like Alice and Janney. I would like to live in a trailer next door to those two. Oh my God.
Well, you're all wrong in a way.
Yes, I mean, Alonzo.
Guffman is not as good as Best in Show. Popstar is not as good as Hot Rod. And Drop Dead Gorgeous is not as good as Smile. So anyway, we're going to pass on all of these. I knew somebody was going to go right to the chum of Christopher Guest. So I decided to dig a little deeper.
Ooh.
This is a cinema podcast and I got to bring it. And I'm going to talk about Orson Welles's final masterpiece, The Other Side of the Wind, which was recently restored and finally completed by Netflix in 2018. It is a movie about a filmmaker played by John Huston, but who is very Orson Welles-ish, who is being followed around by a gaggle of people with cameras, and also his dear friend, who is played by Peter Bogdanovich, who is basically playing Peter Bogdanovich in this movie, vis-a-vis his relationship with Orson Welles. It's about the director trying to get this movie made. We see segments from that movie, but we also see this massive party that's going on where there's a million people there and they've all got different agendas and they all want different things. It culminates with everyone going to a drive-in to see the movie in question and other things that happen beyond that. And it is a film that is basically destroying the cinema of the 1960s and anticipating the cinema of the 1970s. And for a guy who was like decades away from his greatest film, Citizen Kane, that I think speaks a lot to how much Welles had on the ball. This is a movie that is a revelation. I'm so glad that it finally exists and can be seen. And I think that it really kind of takes the idea of the mockumentary and takes it to a genuine level of art. So that's my pick.
God, ooh. I feel so outclassed right now.
Well, look, you can say that, but it all comes down to the votes.
That's right.
It does. It does indeed. So those are wonderful, wonderful listeners.
Yeah. So look, those are our picks. Now it's your turn. Head to our Facebook group and cast your vote at facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm. And next week, we'll find out who's joining Betty Gabriel and the DeLorean in the Hall of Excellence. But now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. So, who wants to suggest the film?
I'll go because I love going first because I don't like a silence. entirely inspired by the lead performance in Honk for Jesus, may I please point you to another festival film that premiered at South by Southwest called Support the Girls, also starring Regina Hall. One of my favorites, it's from 2018. She's such a fantastic performer. This is her in this sort of dramedy space that she's so good at, playing this very overwrought manager of a Hooters type establishment. And you have some fantastic female supporting. Haley Richardson's in this, and it's complex and interesting. and funny and quick. And I wish more people saw it. Anyway, support the girls. Give it a look-see. It's on Amazon Prime and available for rent.
And she won, very deservedly, the New York Film Critics Award for Best Actress that year from Frick Circle. Yeah, that's a great movie and a great pick. I'm going to go with another film that is about sort of show business hypocrisy and about somebody hitting bottom and trying desperately to get their audience back, and about sort of, you know, the machinations that go behind the scenes of what seems like a very sort of innocuous and, if anything, sort of family-friendly medium, when actually there's a lot of dark, twisted stuff going on in the background. And that would be Elia Kazan's A Face in the Crowd, which is available for rent on Amazon and iTunes and stuff. I was reminded, especially towards the end of Honk for Jesus, of that movie and of the magnetic performances given by Andy Griffith and Patricia Hill.
Alonzo, just up in the references this week. Look at you.
So mine is actually Regina Hall's first performance. Her first major screen credit is in The Best Man. And because The Best Man Final Chapters is coming to Peacock later this year, I promise I'm not a Peacock shill. But I do
but
think
you
it
could be for a price.
I mean, but it is really nice to see such an incredible talent just kind of start out in this very supporting role. She plays Candy, as you can imagine, not a striper, but a stripper. And she becomes a central part of this saga as it kind of goes on into the second movie and then now the series that is coming. But you just see such, you know, we know her so much now for her comedic performances. And yes, this movie is funny. And yes, this role is funny. But it actually shows, you know, a hint of the kind of layers that are to come in movies like Support the Girls and, of course, in this film as well. And I believe that I was trying to see if it's on Peacock right now, if it's still on HBO Max. It's kind of floating around the various streaming services at the moment. I most recently watched it on HBO Max, so hopefully you can find it there. But if not, I am sure it will be on Peacock soon.
Yes,
I thought indeed. You were going to say Scary Movie, by the way.
Well, and that's where most people kind of go. So, I mean, I imagine most people have probably seen that one. If not, go watch that one too.
Keep those doors.
Best Man is currently for rental, but it's not streaming.
They took it off. It was one of the many HBO Maxes that got disappeared.
Bastards. I would also, she's also really funny in a movie that very few people saw, opposite Kevin Hart as the secondary couple in the remake of About Last Night.
Yes.
Who's the primary couple? I don't remember.
Amazing.
Yeah, about Scary Movie, Regina Hall carried that whole franchise on her back. Just truly amazing. But yeah, definitely doesn't hold up enough to be my staff pick. Also honorable mention, Love and Basketball, another banger. Mine is actually going to be a little film that I stumbled across on Netflix that I really liked. And if you follow my stories, you saw that I recommended it. But it's The House. It's The House. It's a animated stop motion anthology film written by Edna Walsh, telling different stories that take place in the same house. It should have known the creepy house film had Helena Bonham Carter in it, but she's in it. Susan Wolcoma playing Rosa, which was one of my favorite stories in there. Even if you don't have it, you can cast people of color. Crazy. I know it's a crazy idea. I know we're freaking out about Lord of the Rings. We didn't think that amongst elves and orcs that black people could exist, even though you can't say it takes place in medieval times because we've proven a million times that black people existed even then, even as royals. I know school has failed you. Look, trust me, it's America's problem, not yours, but now it's on you to fix that. Okay, cool. But yeah, The House is my pick.
Solid. Nice. Way to work in an it a dick into your staff pick. Synergy.
That's what it's all about, you know, the segues, the synergy, all the s's. But now it's time for the t's, because we got to give many thanks to Angelique Jackson. Came on, was a delight to have you. But where can people find you and your work?
You can follow me at Angelique814 on Twitter and at ANGE814 on Instagram, and read my work at variety.com. There is actually an interview that I did with the filmmakers of Honk for Jesus, so please check that out. And also, you know, after you've watched the movie, we can also talk more about the Nuck a Few Bucks scene.
Yes.
I can't.
I screamed and rapped along. It was great. Ugh.
Yeah. Okay. I will say one thing. Regina nor Sterling had ever heard that song before they got this script. Yes. This was amazing. This was their introduction to it. And man, brilliant actors. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Truly. Well, also, brilliant hosts. Shout out to Drea and Alonzo. Thank you for another wonderful show. Always great to have you. And you, the listener, thank you for listening. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm. Or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is the amazing Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is the wonderful Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.